Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Just between us.
Hey!
Just between us.
Hey!
Hello! I'm Allison Raskin. I'm a writer, director, and pro-choice.
Hi, I'm Gabby Dunn. I'm a writer, bi-con, bisexual icon, wink, and Dua Lipa super fan.
Oh, interesting.
Oh my god, have you heard Future Nostalgia?
No, I haven't.
It's really good. I love a female pop vocal.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. My like Spotify like most listened to was Carly Rae Jepsen, Lana Del Rey, Miley, Ariana Grande. It's like all that kind of stuff. Rihanna. So Dua Lipa has joined she's also a gay icon in a strange, I don't think she's queer in any way, but she's kind of reached this like Cher level of like gay iconship. And like, it's just, it's sad because it's like dancey pop stuff, but no one can go to the club anymore.
I dance at home.
Yeah, exactly. You're just dancing at home. You're truly, as Robin said, dancing on your own.
This is Just Between Us, a variety show filled with heartfelt advice,
ridiculous games,
and brutal honesty.
Okay, so say why you're pro-choice in your little intro.
Well, because we may or may not have Alexis McGill Johnson, the acting CEO of Planned Parenthood, coming in later for some tough questions.
Did you think that you had to say that so she would start listening and go, oh, okay, phew, this was an episode worth doing?
No, I've just run out of descriptors. And I was desperately racking my brain and thought, oh, that'll be thematic.
Yeah. Well, I think the people know your political stances by now, right? Remember people used to be surprised that you were liberal? Does that happen anymore?
I don't think they were surprised I was liberal. I think they were surprised I was so political, which didn't make any sense.
I think way in the beginning, people assumed because you were into marriage, you must be conservative.
I never got like, wow, I can't believe you're liberal. I just got like, shut up about your views. Well, as we said, we have an incredible episode for you guys. We're going to be talking to Alexis McGill Johnson, the acting CEO of Planned Parenthood.
Then we're going to discuss sleep. What is our relationship to sleep? Mine is horrible, so I can't wait to talk about it. It's so
bad. Can't wait to dive in. I mean, now that we're in quarantine, sleep is pretty much all we have, so I thought it'd be topical.
I want advice from our listeners, to be honest. Okay.
But first, hit it. International question. International question. International question. Kelly, Indiana. Kelly says, how do you balance not reassurance seeking and communication in romantic relationships? So she said, I was recently in a sort of romantic relationship where I was constantly worried about the state of it. If my partner liked me, the other people interested in her and stuff like that. I have social anxiety and I've dealt with similar concerns with friendships before. So instead of sharing them with the person, I worked through my fears and used cognitive therapy techniques to calm my worries about the relationship. The relationship ended recently, and it turns out my worries and concerns about the relationship were right. It got me thinking. I know many of the ways I behaved in that relationship were not good for me. And part of the problem, I realize in hindsight, was the fact that I felt, probably correctly, that sharing my concerns would make the relationship collapse. But this sets up a major dilemma for me. I always worry that people are not telling me the complete truth about how they feel about me because of my anxiety. And sometimes I use reassurance as a safety behavior, rather than tolerating the uncertainty that I can't read people's minds. I also don't want to be the person who is needy and asks for reassurance too much, because that could be overwhelming for the other person. But I obviously need to communicate my concerns and process my feelings, especially when I'm in an open relationship like that was. So how does one both communicate effectively and reduce reassurance seeking in a romantic relationship?
Oh my God. First of all, congratulations to you, Kelly, on how much therapy you have clearly done.
I know.
You are
really
so self-aware. Jesus.
Gold star to your therapists.
This is wild how self-aware you are in like writing about what's going on with you. Damn. Okay. So Allison, this is this person, like, I think could be you. Like, you could have written this.
I could have written this a couple years ago.
A couple years ago, yeah.
I think that what happened was you were just in the wrong relationship. So the fact that, like, you suspected and were correct that if you brought up any of your concerns about the relationship, that the relationship would collapse, and then that ended up being right, you just, like, weren't in a good relationship. So I think that sometimes when that happens and you've done so much self-work and then you follow through on that self-work and then the relationship still fails, you're like, oh, well, I'm making mistakes. I clearly still need to do a lot of work. I'm not behaving correctly. But in reality, the amount of people that we're actually compatible with is very small.
Mm-hmm.
So it might have just been that you were with the wrong person. And so all of the most effective techniques in the entire world are not going to work if you're with the wrong person.
It also sucks to feel like you're doing all of this work to make yourself better and the other person isn't doing anything.
Yeah. And I think that communication and reassurance are two different things.
Speak on it.
I think it's important to, like, make those, distinguish them, so that you don't get away with, like, getting reassurance and being like, but I'm just communicating. Communicating is saying, hey, I'm feeling a little weird because of what you did about this. I just wanted to get your thoughts on why you're behaving this way.
Uh-huh.
And then your partner will say, okay, I was having a weird day. We're in quarantine. I can't see my family for 6 months. I'm sorry. I'm in a bad mood.
Yeah.
Communication. Reassurance is, your partner is acting distant. So instead of, like, asking why or what's going on, you go, hey, do you love me?
Oof. Yeah.
Do you love me? Do you love me so much? Like, how much do you love me? Do you think we'll be together forever? Could you imagine a world without me? Like, that's reassurance. That's not communication.
Right. Yes.
I think that, like, what Kelly needs to do is still really work on her reassurance seeking and make sure that she's not doing that. But that doesn't mean you can't communicate with your partner, and you should communicate with your partner. But it's accepting that when they tell you something, then you go, okay, I believe what you said.
Because that's all you can go on. Like, I really related to the part about reading people's minds, because you can't. You just have to go on what they're telling you. However, it really sucks when you have these instincts and, like, you can kind of read situations really well, and then you're sort of always right about the bad thing happening. Like, that's what's the balance between, like, following your instincts and knowing that something is up, and then also being like, well, I have to take at face value what my partner is telling me because I don't have other information, as I am not a psychic.
I think you have to look at the longevity of their upsetting behavior, right? So if it's, like, one night where, like, your partner is, like, being a little weird and you say, hey, like, what's up? And they're like, nothing, I'm fine. And you're like, okay, but you know they're not fine, but they clearly are choosing not to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, within an hour and a half, you're back to normal. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's, like, weeks of your partner being weird and not telling you, then that's something that's worth acting on. Then it's worth being like, hey, I feel blank. I feel like you're not being communicative with me. Give them that opportunity to finally be communicative. And if they're not, then, you know, if your partner makes you feel shitty or weird all the time, then that's not a good partner. And that's not somebody you want to be with.
Yeah, I guess don't put words in their mouth. I've been guilty of being like, you're upset because of this, this, and this. I'm a detective. And it's like, you have to be like, hey, why are you upset? without trying to fill in the blanks for them and without trying to be like, is it this? Is it this? Like, let them bring it up. Let them tell you. Don't like and give having, them.
Having enough self-confidence that you don't automatically assume that you're always the problem.
Oh, God. Yeah. A lot of times you're like, oh, my God, it's me. It's me. It's me. And then they're like, no, I just like. I couldn't write as much as I wanted to today, or like my exactly. mom said something fucked up or whatever.
The communication part is important, where like you kind of in when you're in a good place, have like a generalized conversation with your partner where you're like, hey, you know, I have anxiety. And so it would really behoove me if when you are upset with me, you just tell me
mm-hmm.
so that I can understand what I did wrong. We can work through it. But like if you do any sort of like withholding distant behavior, then that's when I start to really spin out. So if we can just have an agreement where if I'm the cause of your irritation or I'm the cause of you feeling badly, you just tell me, then I can then assume that when you don't tell me it's me, that it's not me.
Yeah, totally. I've been working on this with my partner where like if I'm disappointed or if I have like a feeling, it's not necessarily that they have to fix it. Even if they do something annoying or if they do something that like whatever, if I hurt their feelings or something, sometimes it's just like, just give me a day. Or like, it's not like, oh, rush and reassure and you have to love me at 100% at all times. And like all that, like sometimes it's just like, let me sit in this for a little bit. I'm having a negative emotion. It's okay that I am. We don't have to like, it's not like The Sims where you have to like rush to be in green at all times. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, well, okay.
I've never played The Sims.
Really? I think you would like it. What do you think about working through all this stuff in therapy and not talking about it with people? Because I know you did that for a while.
I mean, I think it depends. I did that when I was single.
Right.
So that's different. I think that if you're in a relationship, you should, you know, someone like Kelly is so self-aware that like, I think she has a grasp of what are true worries and concerns and what is just her anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the more that she does the work to distinguish between those two, and again, in distinguishing that, that's the reassurance and anxiety versus the communication real problems,
mm-hmm.
then she knows what to talk about and what not to talk about. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a blanket, hey, you're working on your stuff, keep it all to yourself. It's like, work through your stuff, but the stuff that is actual relationship stuff, then you work through that with your partner.
Rather than dumping on them everything that you are already working on with a professional.
No person likes their partner to constantly ask for reassurance.
I know.
Like, I used to be that. I've been in both sides of it. So I've been the one constantly asking for reassurance, and I've been the one where my partner has asked for reassurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of set up a boundary where I go, you can ask me one time.
Oh, interesting. Like once a day or?
Yeah, like literally once a day. Like you can ask me once a day if I love you. And if I say yes, then you have to believe me.
Yeah.
Because after that, it's like one, it makes me feel like you don't trust me or believe my words.
Right.
And it's like, and it's giving fuel to your insecurity, which is just going to make you loop and be more unhappy and spiral.
Because you're like searching the person's face for like, is this true? Are they saying the whole thing? Did they twitch once to indicate right. lying? Like, it's very like.
It's honestly an issue of self-control. It's literally the same thing as like, okay, I'm only going to eat one cookie and then you have 10 cookies.
Yeah, it's like smoking. It's like an addiction.
Yeah. So you have to be like, okay, everything in moderation. I can ask this one time, but that's it.
Wow. I love thinking of reassurance as an addiction, like as an addictive problem.
Oh, absolutely. And as an issue of self-control primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Because who wouldn't want to all day be like, am I a good writer? Am I a good business partner? Do you like working with me? Am I a good daughter? Like, who would, you know, like everyone would want to ask that all the time. We're just not allowed to.
Yeah.
So, Kelly, I think that you're in a really good spot. I think you were just in the wrong relationship. I think continue doing the work on yourself and not giving into your reassurance. But that does not mean that you shouldn't communicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess that was the wrong relationship.
Absolutely. We've all been there.
But many times.
Yeah, not me. I've only had great ones.
I'm not very relatable to the people as I've only been in wonderful relationships. So like, it seems like from other people that
everyone who's been following my journey knows that's so true.
Oh, God.
If you want to submit your international question, send it to justbetweenuspod@gmail.com. That's justbetweenuspod@gmail.com.
Up next, we've got a juicy interview with our highly esteemed guest, Alexis McGill Johnson. So stay tuned. Just Between Us.
Hey! Hi, everyone. Allison here. Anyone who knows me well knows that I love to read. I am always looking for new books, and that is why I'm so excited that this episode is sponsored by Book of the Month. Book of the Month's mission is to help readers discover new books they love and to promote the work of emerging authors. It was so fun for me to get to pick which book I wanted to read this month and have it shipped right to my door. Book of the Month makes it easy to decide which book to read next. Each month, the editorial team reads through hundreds of new titles. They pick some of the best new books for you to choose from. All the books are good, so you can't go wrong. Every aspect of the Book of the Month experience is designed to be fun and special for readers. They have a highly anticipated release at the beginning of each month. Books are delivered in this really adorable bright blue box, and there's a fun app to help you pick your book and track your reading process. They also offer great values on new release hardcover fiction. It's much cheaper than other options. Shipping is always free, and with a loyalty program, you get rewards and even lower prices the longer you stay as a member. My first book from Book of the Month was The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. I am tearing through this book. It is so fun. It's basically about this woman who one day comes home and there's a husband in her apartment, and she's like, "Where did you come from?" And then she figures out that every time her new husband goes into the attic, a new husband comes out, and she's like shuffling through all these different husbands from the attic trying to figure out which one is the best. It is right up my alley, and I love it so much. So if you want to take part in Book of the Month and have a brand new book shipped right to your door every single month, go to bookofthemonth.com and get your first book for $5 with code PETALS. That's $5 off with code PETALS. I cannot recommend this enough.
With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you all about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or use their voice-to-text feature. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. Right before I found out about this project, my mom made an offhand comment about wanting to write a memoir because she had such a wild childhood and there are all these things she's never really talked to us about. But asking someone to sit down and write a memoir is kind of daunting. So then I got her mylifeinabook.com, and now she's getting prompts to answer on a weekly basis, and it's a lot easier than just undertaking an entire memoir. I'm so excited to see what my mom does with mylifeinabook.com because she's someone who doesn't always feel comfortable just sharing about herself, but having these prompts and knowing that I really want to hear her answers is going to inspire her to probably share more with me about her life and her upbringing than I've ever been shared with before. So I'm so excited for that. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code JUSTBETWEENUS at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. Use code JUSTBETWEENUS for 10% off today.
Welcome back to Just Between Us. It's time for the juiciest, most scandalous, controversial segment known to all of podcasting, Tough Questions.
Hi, today we have Alexis McGill Johnson joining us. Hello.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, well, I run the Action Fund, which is a, Planned Parenthood, as you know, is a health provider. We provide reproductive and healthcare services across the country. The Action Fund is there to defend the kinds of healthcare that we provide because, when you start providing care around the sexual reproductive healthcare like abortion, people find ways to attack it. and the Action Fund is here to defend it.
And right now, while we're in quarantine, those sneaky Republicans are trying to attack abortion more than ever, right?
Can you believe it? Can you believe they would actually use a global pandemic to play a political game?
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
can you explain to our listeners what's going on?
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, essentially, yes. I mean, they're essentially using a global pandemic to push a political agenda around people's lives. They are were trying to make an argument that they should, you know, essentially abortion because it would require people to come out during the pandemic, and that it wasn't time sensitive, which of course we know abortion is time sensitive. We know that access to reproductive health care is time sensitive, and it is essential. And what we're seeing is actually, you know, women continuing to do what we always do, which is take matters into our own hands, driving hundreds of miles out of state in certain parts of the country to access safe and legal abortion. And it's just unconscionable.
What are some things, even anecdotally, that you're hearing about people doing during the pandemic to try to access abortions or access Planned Parenthood's care?
Yeah, so there have been a number of states. I guess I should back up a little bit, right? So that obviously many states are in sheltering in place. They have these sheltering in place orders, which is a great thing to help us flatten the curve. And some states decided to extend that to offer executive orders through the governors to essentially ban and restrict further access. Mind you, these are many of the same states that already have really restrictive access on abortion. And what people have done is they've gotten on planes, they've gotten in cars, they've driven hundreds of miles, which means that they are taking the risk not only of exposing themselves, but also others to the new coronavirus. Some patients may have been attempting to manage self-manage abortion. And then, of course, there will be many who are simply just forced to wait until it's too late and they can't actually get the care they need.
Yeah, I think you said in another interview that they're using the pandemic as a cover mm-hmm. for this political move of like trying to make it impossible to get an abortion. And the problem is, like, in Texas especially, the court upheld that decision, right?
Yeah, it did. But like it's kind of like whiplash, right? So over mm-hmm. the last 3 weeks, what's happened in Texas is the executive order came down. Then we sued along with Center for Reproductive Rights and the Lawyering Project. And then it went to the Fifth Circuit. And then, we had to go to this, you know, to the Supreme Court, and then the Fifth Circuit pulled back. And like, there's all of these ways in which we've had to rely on these legal structures to protect what is already a constitutional right. And just recently, I guess in the last, I don't even know what day of the pandemic is, but I think just recently, in the last couple of days, we were able to get a stay to provide medication abortion in Texas. And so, but, you know, the situation continues to be really fluid. This is really temporary relief. And behind that, what we have are stories of providers and patients who are you know, literally calling up patients and they're saying, you know, I know your appointment was scheduled tomorrow. It's now canceled. Or calling them back and saying, you have 24 hours to get in because we don't know what will happen next, you know? And so just the legal whiplash is accompanied by such emotional whiplash for both the providers mm-hmm. and the patients. And, you know, that's, you know, the sham piece, the cover piece really has to affect that, you know, all of this is in the guise of the safety of the patients. And yet not only are we exposing them to, you know, to other to the pandemic, we're also just exposing them to such emotional turmoil.
And just the idea that it's non-essential is just like a basic misunderstanding of the procedure in general. I can't really think of anything more essential and time sensitive.
Absolutely. Yes. You said it well. It is completely time sensitive and it is essential. And, you know, no one stops needing sexual and reproductive health care in a public health crisis. In fact, they need it more.
Well, you also just have spoken on a little bit how it's even tougher for a lot of women right now who are stuck at home with their abusers or in toxic relationships, and having access to this healthcare is almost like you said, like more necessary now.
Yeah. And I think, look, I mean, people are trying to survive this crisis. I'm here in New York City right now with my family, and it's eerie. It's scary. It is weird to be at the center of a pandemic, but we see what people are experiencing all across the country. They're just trying to survive the crisis. Right. And I think women in particular are, you know, bearing the brunt of a lot of the work already in this crisis, right? They're homeschooling children. They're the ones who may be working low-wage jobs because they've been deemed essential. They are making up the majority of healthcare workers. And, you know, when you layer on race and class on, you see that Black and Latinx communities have faced harsher economic consequences, right? So in some ways, it's like, you know, they've been deemed essential workers and then at the same time told actually, but you still don't have control over your own body. And, you know, I think when you think about the kind of structural inequalities that impact people of color, that impact women, you know, to play with healthcare, on top of that, just feels incredibly wrong.
Can you speak to a little bit about what Planned Parenthood provides in addition to abortion services?
Oh, absolutely. Planned Parenthood provides family planning, birth control, sexually transmitted infection testing, so STI testing, treatment, HIV PEP and PrEP, prophylaxis, and, you know, and also obviously safe and legal abortion. Planned Parenthood also provides sex education, sex expertise, right? So, you know, also the time that people are staying home and sheltering in place and, you know, with folks, even if you're not in a situation that is complicated, that may be loving, you know, that may be a big portion of what you may be doing now. And Planned Parenthood is, you know, continues to remain open online through telehealth for access for, you know, to get access to those services.
Oh, yeah. I used to use Planned Parenthood all the time in college because I was the only affordable thing. And I think people have a misconception that it's just an abortion clinic.
Yeah. And look, I think that, we proudly and unapologetically provide safe and legal abortion. And, you know, I believe that, you know, the more I can say that, the more Planned Parenthood can say that. I think it's critically important because, you know, people choose to have abortions for all kinds of reasons, and we should not stigmatize that. And there are also other, you know, abortion fits within a broader spectrum of reproductive health care, identity care, things like gender affirming hormone therapy, you know, that, you know, coming up when I did, you know, like we went to, you know, our girlfriends went to Planned Parenthood, you know, totally in secret, not just because it was affordable, but because we couldn't tell our parents that, you know, or we didn't have relationships with our parents to have those kinds of conversations. And so the fact that for a century, Planned Parenthood has been an incredibly important, trusted provider in community, and that people have seen it and understood it as being kind of that safe space to get care no matter what, and that range of services that, you know, that includes abortion but certainly expands the full care, is really important to understand.
Can we talk a little bit about outside of quarantine, what has just been like the Republicans' plan of attack in terms of getting Roe v. Wade overturned and what you guys are doing to prevent that?
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah. You know, because people have asked, like, aren't you so surprised that they would use this pandemic? And, you know, to your point earlier, it's like, no, because in fact, this has been going on for quite some time. I joined the board of Planned Parenthood actually almost a decade ago, right at the beginning of the 2010 Congress. And it was during that time, a lot of gerrymandering, a lot of redistricting, that we saw this really vehement push around creating restrictive, targeted restrictive laws to restrict access to abortion and abortion providers. And they, those laws, just in the last year, we saw 303 of them being introduced in almost 47 states. So, you know, in state legislatures. And so, you know, only a smaller percentage of them were able to get through. But the idea that under this administration in particular, the sense that that anti-women's health legislatures have become so emboldened around pushing all of these kinds of severe restrictions in the name of women's health that are really anti-women's health. On top of that, the courts have been remade under Senator McConnell. So they've confirmed, I think, almost upwards of 190 conservative judges, some of whom have so little qualification, except, you know, for them, they believe that they will work to dismantle Roe. There's one federal judge who was confirmed on a bench in Missouri. Her name is Sarah Pitlick, who doesn't even believe in IVF.
You know, what? So cool. You know. What? How is that? Okay. How is that quote unquote pro-life? Also, let me say, having people drive far and wide and potentially spread the virus, how is that pro-life?
Right. Exactly. It's not. And I think this is like it's really just exposing the sham, right? It's exposing, I mean, literally mm-hmm. patients who are driving several hundred, you know, thousands of miles from Texas to California, right, to get access to medication abortion. They're driving to get two pills that they will take with, you know, within 24 mm-hmm. hours of each other, and then getting in a car and driving back. And, you know, they are exposing themselves to COVID. They're exposing people around them. They're traveling, they're stopping. They may have had to get childcare taken care of. You know, I mean, all of the ways in which, you know, one would, you know, expect people to behaving in the middle of this crisis, they're asking people to go out and do something differently. So, you know, again, it's consistent. This has been going on for the last decade. It's really intensified under this administration. And so you have these bans, you have these judges, you have the 19 cases, one of which has already been submitted into the Supreme Court, but 18 others that are winding their way up, challenging these restrictions. And so, you know, to the bigger question around dismantling Roe, you know, we are definitely in preparation mode to, you know, that if Roe is not overturned in any number of these cases over the next few years, now that the judiciary is remade, it could very well be gutted to the point where access, you know, really depends on which state you live in. It's already somewhat like that now, depending on kind of the level of restriction, but could really be gutted to a point where you could have access in California and New York and not in Alabama or Texas.
If it was overturned, would it go back to states by state deciding if it's allowed, or would it be illegal federally?
It would go back to the like most recent law on the state book. So again, in New York, you have the Reproductive Health Act that was passed a few years ago that was also decades in the making, where Roe has been codified in the law. And then you have states like, you know, like a Michigan that I think has like a 1931 law on the books that doesn't codify Roe. So, you know, so there will be a lot of work of patchwork of states where you might have reasonable accessibility, other states you would not. And our, you know, best estimate is that 25 million women would be living in states of reproductive age would be living in states without access in their state.
So it's sort of why state legislatures and like local voting is so important now, because in the federal government, all of these judges have been put in place who are just like actively against it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the irony is that, you know, when these bans and things started to happen, we of course appealed to the courts because we knew that the state legislatures were not in our favor during the gerrymandering and remake of many state legislatures across the country. And so the courts were our backstop, just as a reproductive rights movement, right? Our backstop to kind of hold off bad law while the political efforts took shape to really educate people around the impact of what was happening and what could happen. So, you know, so the courts have been holding a number of these bans. They've been working their way through, but as the courts have been remade, they're now in a position, they're in a more conservative frame, and they will, you know, obviously have more incentive to do things that will eliminate or reduce access to abortion.
In terms of pro-life, you know, the saying, quote unquote, pro-life, can you speak to, like, just for our listeners who are young, like, will happen if abortion access is restricted. Like, people will die, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I think, and it's, I mean, like, I totally, the whole idea, we don't use pro-life, we use anti-women's health, or anti-choice or just forced pregnancy, right? I mean, like, essentially, that's mm-hmm. what you are, that's what someone who says they're pro-life is asking. They're asking, they're demanding that you, that if you become pregnant, that you stay there, you remain pregnant. And, you know, for those of us, including me, I was born, I like to say I'm as old as Roe. I was born in 1972, and Roe was decided in early 73. And, you know, the stories prior to Roe were of women self-managing abortion. And that could have meant, you know, using something to puncture a uterus and cause a forced miscarriage. It could use something, you know, taking kind herbs and medicines that may induce the process. It may have meant traveling, you know, to get an illegal back, you know, what they then called back alley abortions, where they would, you know, under the cover of night, go and see someone who was providing. And I think all of those scenarios are things that we continue to see in countries that have very restrictive laws, where people don't also have access to get on, you know, get on planes and, you know, fly to states or countries where access is legal. And so, you know, it is, you know, to our earlier part of the conversation, it is time sensitive. These are really even more critical times, given the outlook of the world that we are sitting in right now. And the idea that we could be looking at a situation post-Roe and having a plan for a world that is post-Roe just really adds to the darkness.
Before we move on to the next segment, which is by far not as important as this segment, one of the things that's been in the news a lot is the Hyde Amendment and Biden's previous support of it. Can you kind of explain what that amendment is and the importance it has and how it's sort of like become so political?
Yes, absolutely. So the Hyde Amendment is essentially kind of a provision that bars the use of federal funds to pay for abortion. And the idea of the premise behind it is that that taxpayers, you know, are divided on issues of abortion, and so their taxpayer dollars shouldn't go to something that they morally disagree with. Now, where the impact of that obviously happens is that, you know, federal funds that are allocated, you know, through various federal agencies like Department of Health, and even increasingly just through these past COVID bills, these Senate and House bills that have been passed over the last. The CARES Act that was just passed to help us get through the pandemic, this Congress has used, and this president has used, again, this pandemic to increase restrictions, expand Hyde. And the real impact of that is that, you know, for people who rely on access to things, you know, like Medicaid, who rely on federal funds like Title 10 to for family planning, it means that having Title 10 or having something like the gag rule in place means that people who are largely low income, Black, Latinx, people who, you know, are, you know, already at a disadvantage, will not have access to federal funds to pay for abortion.
They love their tricky little moves, don't they?
Yes, exactly. Tricky is a good word.
They love to stop us at every possible
move. Exactly.
So what can someone do who wants to fight this? Is like, what does that look like? Is it donating money to Planned Parenthood? Is it calling up our congressman? What can you suggest if you want to get involved?
Oh, I think all these things, right? So of course, resources are incredibly important. You know, the every day patients show up at Planned Parenthood, you know, to get the best quality care possible, and, you know, ensuring that when they get there, Planned Parenthood Health Centers see patients regardless of income, regardless of you know, whether or not they're documented or their ability to pay, right? And so, you know, so any resources to Planned Parenthood helps offset some of those. On the defense side, you know, I think there are a couple of things. I think one, just in the immediate kind of this COVID world, it is really important to like have a bigger watchdog group, because to your point, they're incredibly tricky. They're out there doing, you know, all kinds of sneaky things in cloakrooms, and we need to be vigilant about what's coming up. So we created a watchdog group where if you text enough, ENOUGH to 22422, it'll help keep you updated on the site for reproductive health and rights. And it just kind of helps us, you know, become part of the you know, expand the action network. And then, of course, you know, it's really important to call your electeds and scream and let them know that you will just not tolerate. You will vote them out. You will work hard to, you know, to make sure that if they are voting in ways that are anti-women's health, you are going to, you know, hold them accountable. And I think it's also really important for people who are taking hard votes and they are out there to call and be their champion and say thank you, because, you know, our champions need support. And the last thing is just vote. You know, we have the most critical thing we'll do this year is vote in November. And we need to make sure that the White House becomes a place that supports reproductive health. We need to change the Senate so that we can change the courts, and we need to hold the House so we can protect all of the pro-choice champions that we have seen, you know, really, really hold the line over the last 2 years. They came in 2018, and so I think, you know, anything we can do to defend on those, you know, on those three levels would be fantastic.
That's incredible. I just also quickly, before we get to the game, I want to say we have a lot of queer and trans listeners, and this applies to them as well. I think a lot of times trans men or trans masculine people are left out of the reproductive health conversation. So whenever it has been referred to as women's health, I just want to, for our listeners and our base, say that this is very important for queer people and that all of this same stuff applies to anyone with a uterus. Okay,
absolutely.
Now on to the 100%. Game.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think that was a really great and very gentle call in, and I appreciate that. Absolutely.
Do you appreciate a game called Hypothetical?
I guess so.
Okay, so you and Gabby are my contestants. I'm going to give you a series of hypothetical situations. You can ask as many questions as you want, then you tell me what you would do in that scenario, and I just decide if I like your answer. So our first game is, would you stay with this cheater? You find out that your significant other of 42 years poked a hole in his condom when you were dating. This resulted in you getting pregnant with your first child, who is now 41 and wonderful. Would you stay with this condom-poking cheater who has turned out to be a great dad?
I'm shook.
I am too.
I am shook to my core. Alexis, what would you do?
Oh, 41 years later, how old am I?
You are 70.
I'm 70. Am I still keep?
Yes.
Can I still catch?
You're banging. Yeah.
All right. I might have to think about it. I might have to, I don't have a clear answer.
I really love that "if you are still hot" was taken into consideration. Wow. That is fucked up. I don't know. Alice, you have stumped me. Oh my God.
I think the right answer is that they have to pay like a fine to you every week.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh my God. Buy me a car.
Yeah, like they have to become, do all the chores, pay you money.
Wow, that is so fucked up.
That's a really good hypothetical. Wow, that made me think.
Thank you so much. Here's our next one. Are you a terrible parent? Your adult daughter has gotten very into crystals and doesn't believe in Western medicine anymore. One day, she falls very ill but refuses to go to the doctor. So you drug her tea and take her in. She receives some much-needed antibiotics, but then when she wakes up at the hospital, she refuses to speak to you. Are you a terrible parent? 76% chance she would have died without you interfering.
Oh, my God.
Oh, this one's clear for me. I am a fabulous parent, and as I always tell my girls, I am your parent, not your friend.
My mom always said that to me too. Mm-hmm.
Wow, my parents were real opposite. My parents were like, "We're your buddies." God, I don't know. No qualms here.
It's about her. It's about saving her life, and it's about making sure that the best that we use the best medicine available that we know. I'm also an empiricist and a researcher, so I'm gonna go with the Western medicine.
Alexis wins. That was the correct answer.
Wow, there was a correct answer?
Yeah, that one was black and white for me. Okay, our final question for the win.
Okay.
Would you lie or tell the truth? You find out your spouse's best friend in the entire world is pro-life. They have kept this a secret from your spouse on purpose and beg you not to tell them. Would you lie or tell the truth? You made the discovery after finding their posts on an alt-right pro-life forum you were reading for research. Yikes.
Oh my God. Would you tell your spouse that their best friend was anti-choice? Yeah, I think you have to.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
I think you have to. Because it's like spousal, like when something's a secret, is it a secret or is it a secret and then your partner can know about it?
Look, I think these are really strong, strong viewpoints and strong values, and people need to be able to make decisions about how they interact with folks. And I think it's really important if you see something, say something.
Again, correct answer.
Yeah, wow. Alexis wins.
Alexis is the winner.
Fun.
You can tell everyone you know that you won hypotheticals.
Know,
that'll
exactly.
mean a lot to
I
them.
I will. You need a button.
Oh, my God.
Thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find out more about everything that you're doing?
PlannedParenthood.org.
Simple.
Pretty simple.
Thank you so much, Alexis. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. It was great to be with you guys.
Stick around after the break. We'll be talking about sleeping. Not the fun kind. Well, sort of fun.
What?
I don't know.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Back to Just Between Us. It's time for topics.
XXXXXXX. ZZZZZZZ.
Was that like a snore?
Yeah, a snore. Yeah.
Yeah, because this week we'll be talking all about sleep, baby.
Like how people fake sleep where they go, choo, ha, and it's like, that's never how anyone has slept in the history of time. Or they go like, you know what I mean? When you're like fake sleeping?
Sure.
Whatever. Anyway. The point is that that's not how people sleep.
So sleep is so strange and also so personal. So like I have very specific things that I need to be able to sleep.
Okay.
Which is primarily a very smushy pillow. So I have to like travel with my pillow or else I have a really hard time because I think that I have a short neck. And so I can't sleep on a high pillow. I need a very smushy pillow. And when I've traveled without it, I've had to resort to using towels as a pillow.
I remember this.
I've used bathrobes as a pillow. I think I've used like a sweatshirt as a pillow.
Because it needs to be mushier than pillows typically are?
Yes.
Wow, interesting. Is that your only thing that you have?
And I also really like to clutch something to my body, which is often a pillow.
Wow, so there's a lot of pillow-based situations happening.
Yeah. Like, I don't care at all about the mattress. The mattress can be anything.
Wow.
But I have to have a very soft pillow, then I also clutch a pillow to my body.
I am shook by people who can just fall asleep anywhere. Like, who are just asleep in the car, or people who are just, like, asleep on airplanes. I'm like, what's that?
That's
like?
Awesome.
What is your life like?
I nap a lot, but I don't know if I necessarily fall asleep during my naps.
What?
Like, I'm always napping, but, like, I'm awake.
You mean you're just that's just called laying down.
Yeah, but my eyes are closed. I'm not, like, reading or watching TV. Like, I'm having a serious rest.
But you're not asleep.
No.
Interesting.
Sometimes, very rarely, I'll fall asleep during a nap. But most of the time, I'm just resting.
Wow, we've really redefined nap right now.
Do you nap?
No. I can't sleep at all. It's horrible. I wake up so easily. A dog could bark like 40 streets away and I'll be like, I'm up. I wear earplugs. I wear a face mask like over my eyes. I have blackout curtains. I have a little sea salt lamp that I use. Like, it is a full production. Sometimes.
What is a sea salt lamp?
It's like a lamp that has like warm, like little warm lighting. That I'll sometimes put on. I have sometimes like a white noise type thing on my, I'll put like that on my phone, or like a sleep meditation on my phone. Once again, I recommend The Honest Guys. That's a good sleep meditation situation. Like, it is bad. I also take medication to sleep.
And it still doesn't work?
Sometimes it does. Well, I've tried Ambien, and let me tell you, that's a journey. Ambien is crazy. Because you are awake and walking around and functioning. If you don't go to bed right away, you are awake and walking around and functioning. And you think you will remember everything, and you don't.
Really?
The first time I took Ambien, I went to sleep in one outfit and woke up wearing completely different clothes.
Well, I often strip in the night.
No, I'm talking about like I had changed my pants and
you were
changed
in a suit?
I was wearing a full tuxedo. And I don't even own a tuxedo. It was crazy. No, like, it's weird to wake up in different clothes than what you were wearing and be like,
yes,
wow, okay. I have, like, fully had conversations with people on Ambien and I don't remember it. Like, it is a wild drug.
Why are you not just immediately going to sleep?
I have to now. That's the new thing, is that I have, not new, but, like, the first three times I was like, oh, yeah. And then it was like, no. So I just go right to sleep if I take it. But
would you rather do Ambien than weed?
Weed has been helpful. And I'm also worried that because I usually take something to go to sleep, that it's a dependency.
Yeah, but honestly, that's okay. If it's like, I think if you like need weed to go to sleep, it's fine because it's like not hurting your body.
No. Weed, absolutely. The medications, like I take Seroquel or Klonopin or something like that, that's no bueno. That's
but
like,
then why don't you just take weed instead?
Yeah, I should. I will. Sometimes I do. I switch it off. I switch
just
on and off.
Just get some indica gummies.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't understand why. Because I'll be tired, but I just can't. Like, my brain is going. Always.
Do you read before you go to bed?
No. A lot of times I'll listen to a podcast and close my eyes. Or I'll listen to like a meditation. I'll close my eyes.
I think you should try reading before you go to bed.
Why?
I just think that it's like a really nice habit to get into. So then you're like, oh, this is my sleep time. It's reading time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also will like tire out your eyes without you having to like look at a screen that's bad for you.
Yeah, that's very true.
And you can feel like you can read until you get truly tired.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. I think people have suggested that, or that's sort of a thing that would be great to do. Yeah, it's like a struggle. And I'm also like tired during the day, but I never nap, Because I'm like, ugh, if I nap, it's over.
Just nap. Take it where you can get it.
Sleep, comma, take it where you can get it. Yeah, I think also, like, it's hard to, once you get into the habit of needing a bunch of stuff to go to sleep, it's like, I think maybe that is bad for me too, because it's, now I'm dependent on all of these things.
I think that the word dependent is confusing, because it's like it feels inherently bad, but like, what if you're dependent on the habit of reading before bed? That's not bad. Like, I think that it would be good if you set up like a ritual before bed every night,
mm-hmm.
so that you're doing the same thing every night, so that your body knows it's sleep time.
Are you going to bed at a reasonable hour in the quarantine?
Yeah, I've got nothing to do.
But now that it doesn't matter when you wake up most days, you know.
Well, but Jake has to wake up.
Oh, yeah. How's that sharing a bed?
Jake is the first person I've been able to successfully share a bed with. Like, I used to not be able to share a bed and, like, actually sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake, I can. I think it helps that, like, our bed is a king, but we've traveled and had to share queen, and I've slept fine. I think that a lot of that is because I finally feel comfortable.
Yeah. My partner loves, like, cuddling to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay. I mean, look, this is what happens when a Gemini dates a Cancer. It's like, very much like, you don't, what was funny is Mal was like, when Mal was staying here, Mal was like, you don't cuddle me enough, but my dog loves to cuddle. Like, my dog is also like incredibly needy and wants to be like on you and cuddle. So the two of them take care of each other. Like, I'll be on one side of the bed, like able to sleep by myself, and Mal and Beans are just cuddled together because I'm not able to provide what either of them needs.
Yeah, we don't cuddle like to go to sleep, really.
Yeah, I know people find that romantic, but it's like, I don't know.
You can always like do it for 5 minutes and then move away.
Yeah.
That's what we'll do.
Yeah, I feel bad.
Like, it's not long term. No one's expecting to actually fall asleep this way.
Beans wants to spoon. Like, Beans.
Oh, yeah. Sugar's not interested.
Oh, Beans is a cuddle bug. And he wants it. And I'm like, so I'll get a lot of times, like when I wake up in the morning, I'm up. I like wake up and I don't go back to bed. Like, I get coffee. I'm up. Mal and Beans, they could be in bed for an hour. They don't care. Like, they're just like lounging. And so I leave them. I'm like, you guys have fun.
I could sleep forever.
Yeah, you like sleeping.
Like, I could go to sleep at 10 and sleep till 10, no problem. I could sleep till like 3 if I wanted to. I just don't let myself.
Really?
Yeah. I love sleep.
Oh, man.
But also, I wake up all the time throughout the night.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of bad dreams. So
yes.
I don't really know why I love sleep.
What's your reoccurring dream?
My reoccurring dream is that I'm at a school, but I don't know where or when my classes are.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I can access that schedule somehow, but I can never figure out how to get it in
mm-hmm.
time
mm-hmm.
or where the building is.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other reoccurring dream is that I'm driving a car that brakes are not working.
And you can't, the car crashes or it just brakes?
We just keep going and I just keep trying to avoid stuff.
Oh.
And then my other reoccurring dream that I haven't had in a long time is that I can't see because I have so many contacts in my eyes. And I keep pulling the contacts out of my eyes and there's more and more contacts. And then at a certain point, my arms stop working.
Holy shit.
What are your reoccurring dreams?
I have a reoccurring dream about zombies, zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
That I'm trying to run from zombies and they keep finding me. I have a reoccurring dream about sitting on a carpet and pulling my own teeth out one by one.
Oh, yeah.
That I have loose teeth and that mm-hmm. they're not that they're falling out, that I'm pulling them out, which is
cool.
An anxiety dream is that your teeth fall out and you don't have any control over it. And my anxiety dream is that I pull my own teeth out almost as if like I'm like, yeah, the bad thing's going to happen. But you know what? Fuck it. I'll sabotage it first, bitch. Like, you think my teeth are going to fall out? Bitch, I'll tear them out, which is like so indicative of a lot of things. And then I also have one that I'm like looking at screens and stuff, but they don't work. Did you ever see that movie Waking Life?
No, but all the time I need to send messages in my dreams and it won't work.
Yeah.
Like I keep clicking the wrong buttons and it won't send the right message.
So in this movie, Waking Life, they talk about how you can know if something's a dream because light switches don't work. So if you try to turn lights on and off in a dream, it won't work. So phones are similar. If you try to like use your phone in a dream, it won't work. Something about our brains.
Interesting.
It's a very trippy movie.
Yeah, you know what movie I didn't like?
Mm.
Inception. It made no sense.
I loved it. I saw it 3 times in theaters.
Yeah, we're not a couple. But I really think that you should set up a ritual for your bedtime.
Okay,
and I would recommend indica edibles mm-hmm. about an hour before you want to go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you want to go to bed, you read until you fall asleep.
Okay, I'll try that.
And I would recommend getting a Kindle so that you can read with the light off.
Interesting. Okay. I'll that's a good thing to try. I can also read with the little like, you know, orangey light lamp on.
Yeah. But I just think sometimes it helps to be reading in the dark.
Okay.
And then all you need to do is like click a little button and you don't need to like get out of bed or anything.
Mm-hmm, go to sleep. Okay, I'll try that.
Tamika, come on in and tell us all about your sleeping habits and reoccurring dreams. Hello.
Hi.
What are your reoccurring dreams?
Oh my gosh. They've actually evolved, which I think is a good sign. But the one that keeps coming back is the dream where you're in a car and you're not the one driving. Like someone else is behind the wheel or there's no one behind the wheel.
Ooh.
That's a little freaky, but I'm so used to that one. The newer one is like there's some sort of apocalypse and I'm trying to escape like a bunker of some kind.
Yes. Ugh. Apocalypse. I have that.
Yep.
I wonder where that's coming from.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's always, you know, having to be strategic and like, you know, run from things and, you know, you're in this enclosed place kind of thing. So I think it's probably because of what's going on in the world. Not sure.
It's also about control.
I can believe that.
What did we think of this episode?
Really good. I mean, we learned a lot.
Oh my God. Like that Alexis was so great. This is so important. And like, this was such a good angle to talk to her about. Like, we just have to be so vigilant about all this type of stuff. And I love the emphasis on voting locally, which is a thing we have to constantly be reminded of.
It's also just like really, I think, helpful to remember that like it's actual humans behind this fight, because mm-hmm. Planned Parenthood is such an institution in my head. But then like getting to like have an actual face and voice to that fight is so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And also like makes you realize that like, oh, it's not necessarily this indestructible entity. Like we actually all have to like really work together to fight this thing.
Yeah. I'm always in awe of people who have dedicated their lives to helping other people and doing mm-hmm. like all this work that is sort of thankless and a little bit behind the scenes. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure like she gets attacked all the time. And I'm sure it's like so frustrating. And you're just like standing up to this stuff and banging your head against the wall. And the person who agrees to take that on, I'm like, I'm in awe of you.
And she just had a lovely voice.
Very soothing.
What do we rate the episode?
I rate it 5 out of 5 therapized Kellys.
Ooh, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Tamika?
I had an idea, but I don't know what it's called. Do you know like when you go to sleep and you have to have a specific thing?
Safety blanket?
Safety blanket. Mm-hmm. I think the pillow and like needing something soft beneath your head is like a safety blanket type of thing. That's what it reminded me of. So I was going to say 7 out of 7 safety blankets.
I just have a very small neck.
Oh my God. Measure your neck, please.
I rate it 9 out of 7 tiny necks.
Creepy.
Thank you so much to Alexis McGill-Johnson for being our guest. Just Between Us is hosted by me, Allison Raskin.
And me, Gabby Dunn.
Our engineer is Brendan Burns. He also composed our killer theme music.
Our producer is Tamika Weatherspoon, and our executive producers are Chris Bannon and Josephine Martirana.
Just Between Us is a production of Stitcher.
How is that different from what I was doing?
I fell asleep.
Stitcher.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.